On the 14th of April 2014, the dead of night fell to the sound of gunfire and explosions in several locations in Chibok, a town in Nigeria's northeast. Girls cowered in dormitories at Chibok Secondary School. Men in military uniforms arrived, telling them that they were the Nigerian army and had come to their rescue. The girls were spirited away by their captors, who it would soon transpire were hardline Islamic insurgents, following the orders of Abubakar Shekau, the leader of Boko Haram. The mass kidnapping sent shockwaves around the globe and through cyberspace. The reaction of the Nigerian authorities exposed an incompetence at the core of President Goodluck Jonathan's administration that would later lose him his job via the ballot box. In this edition of Spotlight on Africa, we chart the missed opportunities by the Nigerian government and defence forces in bringing back the schoolgirls. But first we hear from a Christian woman called Laintu, who met several of the Chibok girls while she was being held captive by Boko Haram in a camp in the Mandala Mountains bordering Cameroon.
After the man introduced himself to me, we consummated the marriage. Then I was given a hijab and taken to a house. I asked why I had to go there and he said, "This is marriage." I told him that my parents had not given permission and neither had any of my relatives, so how can this be marriage? And he said, "This is how marriage works for us." So I was forced to stay with the man. I could not leave. He was always armed.
Of the 259 schoolgirls who were rounded up on that fateful night in April, 60 have since escaped their captors. The 219 girls who are still missing have yet to be rescued by the military, as promised by the Commander-in-Chief, President Goodluck Jonathan. To the contrary, the military were under-resourced from the outset. On the night the girls were taken from Chibok, the battalion responsible for securing the town retreated to search for reinforcements. Spokesperson for the Nigerian Defence Forces, Major General Chris Olokolade.
It was unknown that there were different groups attacking different parts of the town simultaneously. While some were attacking the school, some were attacking other places. And so when this was discovered that the attack was far beyond just on one spot, the troops called for reinforcements. But by then, it was really belated, considering the distance from where the reinforcement had to come from, as well as the ambush they fell into on the way.
The Nigerian military has been battling Boko Haram since 2009. Corruption and underfunding are blamed for a lack of morale among troops and the questionable loyalty of some of the top brass. But neither a lack of money nor ammunition can explain why the military have been unable to rescue the schoolgirls, according to Jan Breichenbach, a retired colonel with the South African Defence Forces. He led undercover missions in Angola and Nigeria. Breichenbach says that Nigeria needs a special operations unit within its armed forces.
The kind of guys who should have gone across the border to go rescue the girls should have been trained secretly. They should have been trained properly to react to that in a specific manner. They think that if you march onto a parade with thousands of people and you make a lot of noise, everybody will be scared stiff of you, you see. That's rubbish. It's not like that. It's not in Africa. In Africa, the size of the army doesn't count much. It's the capability that they have, and the equipment they have, and the training that they have. And quite frankly, they could have stopped that thing about the girls going, being taken over the other side. If we'd done it that way and rescued the girls without a lot of women hoo-ha in the press and all that sort of thing, and the guys on the other side of the border would never have done it again.
Instead of mounting an operation to rescue the girls in the days after they went missing, the Nigerian government went into denial, claiming that far fewer had been kidnapped than was being reported by the media. But local people knew different. In the months leading up to the kidnapping, vigilante groups had been formed to help fend off insurgents. It was a group of vigilantes who first went in search of the schoolgirls in the vast Sambisa Forest Reserve. A 19-year-old named Adamu was among them. He explained that his group arrived too late because the girls had already been smuggled into Cameroon.
The civilians get up of there, they warn us, they tell us they see two motorcycles of the Boko Haram with the two buses. They carry the woman, they pass Banki area and they enter Cameroon.
Since talking to RFI in April 2014, Adamu was killed while trying to defend the town of Kwaza from a Boko Haram offensive. By the end of 2014, Boko Haram was in control of 80% of Borno State, where Chibok and Kwaza are situated. The bloodletting and kidnappings in the northeast of Nigeria saw President Goodluck Jonathan come under verbal fire from people who were once his close allies, including former president and one-time military leader Olusegun Obasanjo.
It's unfortunate what I said to Jonathan before, and what I said also in my letter, and I said it several times, is that once active and concrete action was not taken within 48 hours, period of 72 hours is already too late. We will never be able to get those girls together again. And the story of those girls will go on for the next 30 years. Some of them will come out when they are adult, or they will be sent back when they are pregnant by those who have captured them and all that. If anybody now is thinking of being able to get those girls relieved intact, he must be daydreaming.
But it was mounting international pressure that forced President Goodluck Jonathan out of denial 4 weeks after the girls' abduction. Jonathan's first stop was Paris to attend a security summit hosted by President François Hollande, where he expressed confidence in bringing the girls back safely to their families.
And for the Chibok girls, of course, we've also heard from my host, we are totally committed to ensuring that these girls are found wherever they are and make sure that they join their families. We'll do all our best. Presently, Nigeria has 20,000 troops in this part of the country, the northern part of the country, the northeastern part of the country, where we have these terrorists. We've been scanning the areas with surveillance aircrafts, and of course also using local intelligence sources. This has been complemented now by France, UK, US, and other countries. So I believe with this cooperation within the sub-region and nationally, will be able to find answers to these missing girls.
The reality on the ground, thousands of kilometres from Paris, is a low-level guerrilla insurgency being fought in a sparsely populated area the size of Belgium. Poorly paid Boko Haram fighters are encouraged to rape and pillage under the guise of religion. Intelligence gathering by the Americans, Brits, French and Israelis is unlikely to stop kidnappings, which local people say occur on an almost weekly basis. Stephen Davis is an international negotiator and a priest who spent several weeks in Nigeria trying to secure the release of the girls. He explained why he lost faith in his mission.
What the world doesn't seem to understand, the Chibok was just one of a range of kidnappings, and they've been going on for more than a year now, and we estimate that there's probably around 300 other girls, non-Chibok girls, if you like, who have been kidnapped over the last year and are being held captive, as well as quite a number of boys and youths who have been kidnapped and being pressed into service for Boko Haram, some now as child soldiers.
The majority of the Chibok schoolgirls were Christians. Most will have lost their faith as well as a hope of furthering their education. But even months after being abducted, forcibly converted and habitually raped, some young women and girls keep their faith, as Laitu did.
The woman who was taken at the same time and was also married off could not escape. I left her there when I escaped. Among the other Christian women who were also converted, one of them even gave birth to a child. The other three were not pregnant when I left. I am the only one of them who escaped.
Line 2 was interviewed by RFI's Binta Diagne. This week's Spotlight on Africa was presented and produced by me, Rosie Collier. You can listen again to this and other magazines on our website at rfienglish.com.